gang. Welcome to another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio on the Republic Broadcasting Network, RBN, republicbroadcasting.org. It's the yin and yang of free speech. Because it's on the South Korean flag. So go to republicbroadcasting.org, click on the donate button, send fundage to 2251 Double Creek Drive, Suite 302, Round Rock, Texas, 78664. Phone it in to 1-800-742-2719. Dogs will be standing by. Send your extra money to David Duke at Box 188, Mandeville, Louisiana, 70470. Okay, we have with us Mark Collett. Mark, welcome to the show.
Hello, Patrick. It's good to be here today. I've got some interesting news for you. I've got good news and bad news. I'm going to start...
That's a yin and yang. That's a yin and yang.
Well, I'm going to start with the bad news. Now, as people in America who listen to this show will know, or anywhere in the world who listen to this show will know, we had some anti-migrant protests. Some of them turned a little hot and heavy in recent memory, and there was a large number of arrests. Now, there's some really bad news here, because a 61-year-old grandfather called Peter Lynch, who was arrested for nothing more than shouting at police, died in jail in the last couple of days. Now, obviously, that is a very, very sad sort of, you know, it's a horrific story. You know, this old boy was essentially sent down for nothing more than shouting at the police, and he's dead now. So that's it.
And what was the cause? Do we know what the cause of death was?
They're saying, the press haven't completely let everybody in on that at the moment. It usually takes a while to come out, but the press are saying they understand it was suicide. So he basically got taken to jail. He couldn't cope with it. Obviously, he's over 60 years of age. You know, he's not a spring chicken. He couldn't cope with it in there. We don't know what's actually happened to him. And that's an interesting point to make when we say we don't know what's happened to him, because some jails in the UK are very white and some jails are not very white. Now, there's jails like Hull, which Sam Mealy is in, and that is sort of a 95%, probably more than 95% white jail. Now, when I say white, I don't mean none of them are immigrants. I mean they are all, you know, of European descent in there. That is a white jail. And then there are other jails which are heavily, heavily either Africanized or Muslim. So if you go to jail in London, you are looking at spending time with a lot of Muslim chaps. That's just a fact. Now, obviously, we don't know, or I haven't seen which jail he's in. You know, I could look that up, but I should assume that my assumption is he could well have been in a jail where he was being made to feel deeply uncomfortable. Because obviously, if you're in the, you know, if you're in the right jail, if you end up in somewhere like Sam is in Hull, you're going to be fine, because you're going to be with white guys. Most people in those sort of prisons are, you know, working class lads. Most of them will hold probably similar anti-immigration views. But if you're in one of these jails, say London, like, you know, if you went to one of these London jails, you would be in potentially a lot of trouble because of the kind of people that are in those jails. And obviously where you go largely depends on the court in which you were sentenced. So if you're sentenced to, you know, Leeds Crown Court, you will immediately be taken to Leeds, where you'll be held. Now, Leeds is a category B prison, but it's also a holding prison. So it holds people there until they are assigned to another institution. So all of this really sort of gives you, you know, the listener a little bit of an insight into the British prison system. But I would say that with somebody like this gentleman, it could well be because he was being bullied. It could well be he was just deeply unhappy. I don't know. Nothing more has come out, so it's all really speculation. But it is incredibly sad. And to jail a man of that age for shouting at the police, seems ludicrously cruel for a start. Absolutely disproportionate and cruel. But for him to also end up actually dying because of this, it just seems, absolutely unbelievable. It's just heartbreaking. And unfortunately, that is the sad reality of these cases. And for those of you who know a little bit about the UK and the UK justice system, this might bring back memories, because not long ago, a man was jailed for, again, a multi-year sentence, a multi-year jail sentence for putting bacon on the door of a mosque. Now, look, I want to make this completely clear. I'm not suggesting anybody goes and puts bacon on the door of a mosque. That's not my sort of activism. It's not the kind of thing that I'd be involved in. It's not the kind of thing I endorse. It's not the kind of thing I think is going to win back our country. It's a pretty silly thing to do. But to suggest that putting bacon on the door of a mosque is somehow a crime that needs to be punished by jail, I think is bloody absurd. I think it's an absurd idea. And I think that anyone who starts suggesting that, a jail sentence for bacon on a mosque, on the door of a mosque, is a proportional sentence, is an idiot. And that was always a hallmark of the English legal system, was proportionality. So the idea was that fundamentally, if you were taken through the English legal system, you would end up with a sentence proportionate to the crime that you committed. So you wouldn't, the idea was that you wouldn't steal an apple and get your hand chopped off, because an apple isn't worth, the use of a limb for the rest of your life. You wouldn't say that was a fair way of dealing with the theft of an apple. You'd say it's vastly disproportionate. But now, obviously, things are very, very different indeed. So you see people getting these sentences for, crimes which are, nothing more than sort of speech crimes, thought crimes in some cases. But these sentences are extremely long. And another sentence has been passed like this recently for a woman named Lucy Connolly, which I'm sure we can discuss later. And that's another harrowing case that I've produced a video on, that, the state have handed this poor woman who merely made a social media post, and she's been given a sentence, again, a multi-year sentence for a social media post. And this is becoming more and more common in the UK. We are seeing this tyranny just get worse and worse and worse. So that's the bad news. I don't know if you've got anything you want to ask me about the bad news before we talk about the good news.
Well, how many people were arrested over these riots in, what was the name of the town?
Well, the murders happened. What happened was, there was the murders of the three girls in Southport. And off the back of the murders of the three girls in Southport, there was initially a disturbance in Southport itself. However, that then was somewhat trumped by spontaneous protests breaking out all over the country. And these protests obviously then led to a mass number of arrests. And I think you're talking now well over 1,000 people arrested. Now, the problem is, a lot of these people committed very, what you would say would be minor offences. They didn't commit what would be called major offences. But unfortunately, and some of them, there wasn't even CCTV footage or anything like that. It was just sort of like an officer's word or, very, very minor evidence against them, which wasn't particularly great. But these people thought they were all going to get very low sentences if they just admit it and entered guilty pleas nice and early into the proceedings. Now, that wasn't the case. This isn't like a normal case where the government were going to grant clemency to people. This has been a very, very series of harsh judgments, which have basically caused people to reevaluate the British justice system. So when you get somebody entering a guilty plea, the whole point of a guilty plea is that a guilty plea is to ensure that you get some form of clemency when it comes to sentencing. But these guilty pleas haven't really resulted in the usual third being knocked off a sentence. They've actually not seem to have any effect whatsoever. And you've had a lot of people who have got clean criminal records being caught up with a moment of madness, kicked a police van, thrown a traffic cone, done something which is relatively minor in the grand scheme of things. We're not talking about people stabbing police or burning down a store or something. Relatively minor. And they've been dragged to prison for, sentences of 26 months, 28 months, 31 months, etc. for what really are offences that you would class as very minor offences. And on top of that, offences that people have, entered a guilty plea in order to, sort of be a mitigating factor to ensure that they don't go to prison. And on top of this, the prisons have filled up so rapidly because so many people have been sent to jail. The prisons were already overflowing, but so many people have actually been sent to jail. You've ended up in this really weird position where Keir Starmer has said, look, because of all these people that we need to jail for doing these very minor things, we're going to let a raft of people out of prison. So they have freed thousands of prisoners, including sex offenders, including violent criminals that have stalked and harassed their partners. And some of these people have been released and immediately gone out and reoffended. I think in one case, one of them actually went out and, committed a sexual offence almost, the same day of being released. I'm not sure it was the same day, but it was very close to being the same day. And this sort of shines a light on how corrupt the political and judicial system is in Britain now, and not only how corrupt it is, but how justice, I say justice because it's obviously not justice, but how, so-called justice in Britain is more about making a political statement than it is about ensuring that the right person goes to jail. Because if you said to someone, well, okay, who would you rather have in jail? Man A, who, stalked his ex-girlfriend, put her through 2 years of hell, murdered a pet cat, daubed graffiti all over her house, or this guy who shouted something at a police officer at a demonstration. I'm pretty sure that unless you're going to be some kind of rabid leftist, you would say, well, you've got to ensure that the guy who's been stalking his ex, he stays in jail. He stays in jail and he doesn't come out. He's obviously a genuine risk to, the public. But that's pretty much the opposite of what we've seen from the British justice system. The opposite has been true. So we are instead seeing, these actual dangerous prisoners being released in order to allow political prisoners to go to jail. And when I say political prisoners, a lot of these people going to jail are actually people who have simply said things online as well. It's not just, that there are some people who obviously went out and got involved in protests, and the argument could be made, well, there were some, somebody threw a traffic cone at the police. Does throwing a traffic cone at somebody with a riot shield really need a multi-year jail sentence? Arguably not. But in some of these cases, you're having people being sentenced for making very mild posts on social media that, to be honest, are, when you're looking at them, they're really something and nothing. And I know that sounds like I'm sort of minimizing it and playing it down, but they really are something and nothing. A guy got a 2-week jail sentence for posting a picture of sort of migrants and saying, coming to a town near you.
Well, are they not coming to a town near you?
Well, they said that was inflammatory, and in the current, you know, in the current climate, that kind of inflammatory language apparently is exactly what the state is going to start punishing people for. So there has been a ramping up of the state's kind of definition of what is incitement, of what is seen as inflammatory or inciting. And there is a real problem in this country in that most people, I know this is going to sound insane, considering everything I've just said, this is going to sound insane. Most people still believe that if they're taken to, you know, court, and that they hold their hands up and explain themselves and enter their guilty plea nice and early and apologize in front of the judge, they think they're going to walk out because they've seen so many criminals walk out. You know, to the credit of the people who are, you know, pleading guilty, which sounds insane to say, like, you know, there's some credit to these people because, you know, you and I obviously understand that pleading guilty when the whole system's against you is not going to get you clemency. But as these people have, you know, for years seen paedophile walks free from court for apologising, you know, black rioter gets suspended sentence, young thugs who terrorised pensioner get sent on a holiday in order to boost their morale. And they see all these things and they're thinking to themselves, well, you know, it's almost like everyone gets a free pass these days. Everyone gets this free pass. Surely, you know, as a hardworking man that pays his taxes and, you know, has never had a criminal record and is in his 60s, and clearly it was a moment of madness, if I go up there and apologize, the system will show me the same form of clemency that it's shown other people throughout the years. But you know, and I know, Patrick, that the system views different people in different ways. So from the system's point of view, somebody like, say, myself, having this conversation with you is seen as a greater threat to the system itself than a sex offender who's sharing millions of obscene images of children, because that person doesn't actually threaten the system in any way. That person, you know, that person might actually agree with the system. You know, my person might be a Labour voter, might agree with multiculturalism. He might go to the Pride festivals and be supportive of all the madness. But somebody like myself who isn't and says something, that threatens the system's power. So in many ways, what we're actually seeing is a system whereby normal people are being judged in court not based on how much of a criminal they are or how heinous their crime is, but of how much they have gone against the system or how much they are seen as a threat to the system by the system itself. So if the system says, right, you go back to your homes and you do not come out and protest, the people who say, well, actually, I'm going to go out and protest, those people are seen, you know, those people got a black mark against their name. And that black mark against their name is, you know, seen as a more heinous, you know, as a more heinous thing than, as I said, somebody who has done something that you and I would genuinely describe as heinous, such as, you know, committing an act against a child, you know, maybe mugging a pensioner, setting fire, let's say, to the Union Jack at the Cenotaph. So, you know, during the Black Lives Matter riots, a teenage boy, black, climbed up on the Cenotaph. He got a lighter out. He tried to set fire to the flag there. Obviously, the flag is of major importance. You know, these men marched off to war, fought. Many of them died. Obviously, that's there for to remember the people who died, fought and died. Thank you.
Hello, folks. This is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, DixieRepublic.com, where you can meet all of your Southern needs.
I'm so excited to have you as part of the Wild Pastures family, and we look forward to bringing you the pasture-raised meats that you and your family will love. Now, we started Wild Pastures because so many of my clients would tell me they just couldn't find high-quality pasture-raised meats, and even when they did, it was so expensive that they couldn't afford to eat it regularly. Now, I'm not talking about the bottom-of-the-barrel healthy meats that have claims like natural or free-range or even cage-free, terms that were actually created by the industrial food industry to make us feel all warm and fuzzy about buying their low-quality products. I'm talking about truly nourishing pasture-raised meats, the kind that you'll never really find in a grocery store. Our farmers are doing things beyond organic. Our beef is 100% grass-fed and grass-finished and raised on pastures free from chemicals and other pesticides. Our chickens are 100% pasture-raised, where they get their natural diet of grass and forage and insects. We will never settle for free-range, which is actually one of the most deceptive terms in the chicken industry. In fact, less than 0.1% of the chicken consumed in the United States is truly pasture-raised in the way that ours is. And our pork is 100% pasture-raised as well. So if you care about where your food comes from, then you have definitely made it to the right place. As a Wild Pastures member, you'll be supporting the most highly principled farmers in America and getting the most nutrient-dense, nourishing, and sustainable meats in the world. I'm confident you'll love being part of our mission at Wild Pastures, and you will really love the delicious, nourishing meats that we're going to deliver straight to your door.
Visit republicbroadcasting.org and click the Wild Pastures banner ad. Secure a shipment today. Beef, poultry, and pork raised the way nature intended.
Out, he tried to set fire to the flag there. Obviously, the flag is of major importance. You know, these men marched off to war, fought, many of them died. Obviously, that's there for to remember the people who died, fought and died for that flag. But when a young black lad climbs up there and tries to burn it, it's, oh, well, you know, it's understandable. It's a, you know, no pun intended, heat of the moment action. And off you go back home and, you know, we understand your plight as a young black man. But when a white guy sees three girls stabbed in Southport and he throws a traffic cone towards police, and again, I'm not saying that anyone should be out there throwing traffic cones at the police or anything of the sort, but you cannot really say with a straight face that trying to deface the cenotaph is a lesser crime than, you know, throwing a traffic cone. You know, at the end of the day, throwing a traffic cone is fundamentally neither here nor there, is it? You know, it's like, oh, well, you did something. It was slightly naughty. Okay, it's not going to cause any actual damage. No one was hit. No one was damaged. But actually, you know, attempting to deface and actually, you know, singeing this flag and going up there, that's going to cause national outrage. And it did that. That's something that causes sort of like national outrage. It's something that people look at and say, wow, you know, this is absolutely, you know, horrendous. But the way the courts see this is the other way around. And it shows this huge disconnect, because if you went into a pub or working men's club or just like a little survey in the street, let's say I walked down the street with you today in Wakefield, a city near me, and we interviewed 100 people and say, look, which crime do you think's worse? This guy tried to set fire to the flag at the cenotaph. This guy threw a traffic cone towards the police. I'm pretty sure that every white person you ask, I'm pretty sure actually most ethnic minorities you ask will say, well, the cenotaph thing, that's the worst. But that's not how it's judged by the judiciary, because the judiciary are absolutely politicized. And they see these young blacks as people who are the future of this country, whereas they see the whites, as basically people who are impeding their progress in some way.
Okay, well, you said you also had some good news. What could that be?
Well, the good news is the organization that I founded, Patriotic Alternative, we have been sort of pivoting away from the idea of electioneering. In recent times, we've pivoted away from that. We tried to get passed as a political party. It was something that never happened. But we feel that sort of political road is largely blocked off to radical ethno-nationalists that talk about things like the JQ. So what we thought the country needs most is a radical white advocacy group. And I've been talking about this with you for some time. So we intend to present a pro-white civil rights advocacy group to protect white people who are discriminated against by the British state. So we set up a fundraiser. We've done numerous fundraisers for political prisoners who have been part of the nationalist movement. And so far this year, I think we've raised, in total, for all of the political prisoners we've raised money for, I think it must be pushing £100,000 now. And for these people who got caught up in this disorder, we've raised £15,000. And we've started distributing that money to the families of these political prisoners. Now, we've already gifted £2,000 to the family of Lewis Carver. Now, Lewis Carver, he was jailed some time ago. But recently, a man called Daniel Dix was jailed for something very, very minor. And we have this week given the family of Daniel Dix £1,000. Now, he was jailed for 2 years and 8 months for pushing a shopping trolley towards the police, and the shopping trolley hit a fence pole and it dented it. So he's essentially being given almost a 3-year sentence for scratching a fence pole. I mean, it's absolutely ridiculous. You know, I should imagine that anyone who hears that, unless they're a rabid leftist, would be like, that is a ridiculous sentence. But that is the kind of sentence that people are being given, as I said earlier. However, we have now gifted him £1,000, or gifted his family £1,000 to help them pay for Christmas. And we are doing this. So obviously £15,000 has been raised. We've distributed £3,000, that a fifth of that have been distributed. And we are now looking for other people to we are now looking for other people to distribute this money to.
That's good. And the fundraising, what's your method of fundraising?
Well, we use a site called GiveSendGo. GiveSendGo are a site that we don't use GoFundMe. We use GiveSendGo. GiveSendGo is a site who will
truth. You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Real news, real talk, real people. Because you can handle the truth.
Get more tank will save you money every month on gas. I'm Dave Von Kleist, and I noticed increased performance after my first tank of gas. My mileage increased by 2.5 miles per gallon, and I'm saving money on every fill-up. Get more tank is American-made, is used by trucking companies and heavy industry, and is now available to the public. Get more tank works in any gas or diesel engine, cleans your engine, improves performance, reduces emissions, and you'll feel it every time you step on the gas. If you're an owner-operator, farmer, heavy equipment operator, or use any kind of engine from chainsaws, leaf blowers, lawnmowers, ATVs, you name it, contractors, electricians, plumbers, painters, lawn service companies, Get More Tank will save you money and extend the life of your equipment. Hey, if you've got an engine, then Get More Tank. Save your money, save your engine, reduce your emissions, and save the earth with GetMoreTank.com. A 5-pack of GetMoreTank.com is only $22.22 plus shipping. Use the promo code Republic Broadcasting and get 10% off. Get More Tank is EPA registered, doesn't void warranties, and results vary. GetMoreTank.com.
My name is John. I'm the founder of Blackout Coffee, and I started Blackout because I really love coffee. I've always loved coffee, and after traveling so much to Europe, South America, and trying so many different coffees that were so good, and every time I came back to the U.S., I was so disappointed with the coffee, so I figured that I had to do something about it. The biggest difference is on the beans and the roasting process, how we roast it, and how fresh it is. The fresher the roast, the better the quality. Here I have like all of the coffee that's roasted within 1 to 2 days prior to being shipped. So it literally gets to consumers' house within 3 to 5 days after being roasted. If you like coffee, you have to try ours. It's fresh roasted. It's one of the best beans that we can get, and you will definitely see the difference.
Visit blackoutcoffee.com and use the coupon code REPUB10. That's REPUB10.
Homeowners, are you in foreclosure, expecting to be served with a foreclosure lawsuit, or suspect your lender has coerced you into an illegal mortgage transaction? A huge number of mortgages made in the last 10 years have legal issues and are possibly defective. State laws and the U.S. Supreme Court have upheld that defective mortgage documents are grounds for foreclosure defense and for counterclaims in favor of the homeowner. If your mortgage has been sold or assigned since closing the loan, it may be defective and you may be paying the wrong party, and the lender may not have standing or the right to foreclose or collect payments under the law. If you would like to know if your mortgage is legal or not, or know if you are paying the right party, we can help. Our initial consultations are free of charge. We are not attorneys. We are legal researchers and work closely with experienced lawyers who know how to help you find the evidence to help you keep your home.
Email Tom at republicbroadcasting.org. T-O-M at republicbroadcasting.org.
And go. Give, Send, Go is a site who will who allow people like ourselves to raise money, Christian groups, Trump supporters, etc. They are allowed to raise money on that platform. They don't discriminate, and they have a very, very good terms of service. They're run by a Christian couple, really, really lovely people. So everything that we do via this fundraising is very, very open, and it's very, very, honest. So what we do is we do not raise this through our own platform. And that's very, very important. Now, a lot of groups fundraise through their own platform, and you'll see a little totalizer on their website, and they will inform the public of how much is raised. Now, obviously, that immediately causes concern, because you don't know exactly how much is being raised. Now, with Give, Send, Go, it's completely transparent. So if you do a Give, Send, Go, everything on there is 100% transparency. People can see how much is raised, and people know how much Give, Send, Go take as a cut, because obviously they're a platform, so they have to make money as well. You know, I'm not saying these guys shouldn't be making money. They should. You know, they're doing everyone a lovely service. But this allows us to show people how we raised the money, how much we've raised. And people can say, look, if you've raised £15,000 and there's a 10% fee for raising the money, that means there's £13,500 to go to prisoners' families. That's great. So firstly, it's very, very open and honest the way it's done. Secondly, we set a very clear criteria for how we were going to help people. The first part of our criteria is we are not giving money to the prisoners. This is for the families of political prisoners. And that means that we are looking for people who are mums, who are dads, who are carers, who play an important role in a family group and that were jailed and that family is suffering. So the money is for the families. The next issue is we had three categories of people we're raising money for, because obviously not everybody who was caught up in the Troubles was acting in good faith. Now, obviously, Daniel Dix, he pushed a shopping trolley at a fence. It's ridiculous for him to go to jail for that. But there were some people who did things that weren't right. There were people who did things such as looting. Well, if you're out and you're demonstrating and you then end up going into a shop and stealing four boxes of trainers, that's not what we're supporting. So we drew up three categories of people that we are going to raise money and give to the families of. The first category is thought and speech crimes. So we will support the families of anyone jailed for something posted on social networks or something that was spoken. So if it's a speech or thought crime, we're supporting them. The second group of people that we're raising money for is people who committed non-crimes. So a large number of people have been arrested simply for being at protests where disorder took place. Well, if you go to a protest and somebody throws a brick at the police and you just stood there and watched or filmed, you should not be being arrested. So the first group are thought and speech criminals. The second group are what we call non-criminals, people who have not committed any form of crime. Okay. And the third group are people who committed minor offences but have been punished disproportionately. So obviously, if you kick the side of a police van, okay, that is an offence, that's a criminal act, we don't support that act, but we acknowledge that your criminal act should not have resulted in a multi-year sentence. If you pushed a shopping trolley at a fence and it damaged a fence pole, I mean, I don't know how a shopping cart would damage a fence pole. A shopping cart is is basically a metal mesh going into a fence pole. What did it do? Knock the paint off it, scratch it. But to suggest somebody needs almost 3 years in jail for scratching or chipping a fence post is idiotic. It's tyrannical. So our game plan is to give money to the families of people who fall into one of those three broad groups and to ensure that they're looked after in their time of need. And we're the only group in the UK doing something like that.
So you're not moving in the direction of electoral politics, because I know some people were thinking that sooner or later you'd be trying to fill the shoes of the British National Party, right, the BNP. But you're not moving in that direction. Instead, you're moving towards white advocacy.
Well, yeah, I can explain why as well. And it's quite important why we've chosen to do this. So, obviously, a lot of people in the past have gone down the road of electoral politics. And it hasn't resulted in any gains. So people have been doing elections since the 1960s, been standing on this post-war. In the 1960s, nationalist parties really kicked in and started standing in elections. There was the original incarnation of the BNP. There was the League of Empire Loyalists, which became the National Front. They famously had a large electoral push in 1979. The National Front then died off and John Tyndall, the leader of the National Front, broke away and created the BNP. The BNP then became Britain's largest and most successful political party, and that accumulated with 56 councillors, one county councillor, a GLA member and two MEPs. That sounds very impressive on paper, but when you factor in that there's between 19 and 20,000 councillors in Britain, and we had 57 of them, it becomes less impressive, you know, significantly less than 1% of the councillors. The BNP now has no councillors, no MEPs, no GLA members. It collapsed. Nothing has ever been achieved via the electoral road other than pouring millions and millions of pounds into basically the, you know, the coffers of either printers or the government, because you have to pay to stand in elections. To stand in parliamentary elections, it's £500 per deposit. If you don't get 5%, you lose that deposit. You know, most nationalist candidates struggle to get over 5% in election, meaning, you know, if you stand 200 candidates and 100 of those candidates fail to get their deposits back, you lose a huge amount of money. You lose £50,000. And, you know, fundamentally, that is a bad thing, you know, to just pour £50,000 into the government for the right of standing in election is not good. And that's happened again and again and again. And you might be thinking, well, why initially were you interested in standing in elections to some degree? Well, we did try a few elections, and that was before reform, like Nigel Farage's Reform Party became so huge and won its parliamentary seats. But the fact of the matter is, now that Nigel Farage is in parliament, now the Reform Party is seen as the vehicle for electoral sort of anti-immigration electoral politics in the UK, we are attempting to do something different, something more dynamic, and to fill a void that no one else seems to want to fill. And the void that we're filling is this large open space of what amounts in the UK, you guys would call it white advocacy, but we would probably call it indigenous advocacy, because although it's pro-white, you know, the indigenous people of these islands are the white British, we are white. And we are filling that void by helping these prisoners, by giving people legal advice, by assisting in things like legal help for people who are being discriminated against in the workplace because of their beliefs. And there does need to be a robust pro-white civil rights movement in Western nations. And I think that's something that would be really good in America. Like, I don't believe that the American right has a chance in elections. It was one of the things, I was a big supporter of the National Justice Party, but I don't believe the National Justice Party had any ability to stand in elections. I remember seeing the NJP admiring them. I love Mike, I love Warren, I love Stryker. I had a great relationship with them. So you might be thinking, well, if you've got a great relationship with them, what did you disagree with them on? Well, I never thought, as a third party, and obviously they're defunct now, but I never believed that as a third party that they could actually run an effective campaign against the system. I didn't believe they could do that, and they didn't, you know, fundamentally they didn't. So, you know, saying I didn't believe they could do that, well, they didn't, and that's really the end of it.
And of course they never actually even tried. It was like something that was potentially in the future, right? We had Warren Baylog on the Patrick and Jeremy show about a year and a half ago, 2 years ago, and I was asking him questions about that, and it was, you know, something in the future. You mentioned that the British National Party, they won councillor elections, what we would call city council elections or something like that. And for them to win a seat, a town council in West Virginia or something like that, it could have happened, in the right places. That could have happened, but they actually never got there. It might have happened. But they didn't. They didn't get there.
Well, no, I realize they didn't get there. And I don't think winning those small seats has the seismic effect certain people think it does. And I don't think there's any chance of getting to a position where national power could be attained. So I do, however, think the NJP did some amazing things. So you might be thinking, well, okay, you know, this is an interesting conversation because you think the NJP did some amazing things, but how did they do amazing things if they weren't going down the electoral route? Well, I remember when there was the chemical spill in East Palestine in America, and in East Palestine, this train had been derailed. There was a big chemical spill. The government didn't have any money for it. The people were basically just told, you know, stop your whining. You know, you guys don't need money. There's other priorities, you know, and obviously there's always other priorities for America, whether that's Ukraine, whether that's, you know, the Middle East. Very, very rarely are American citizens the American government's priority. That's just a sad fact. But this is the rub. Basically, when it comes down to it, you know, when it comes down to it, when Eric Stryker went to East Palestine and when he confronted political officials there and he began, you know, pressing them, saying, when are you going to do something for white people? That was absolutely fantastic. That was, you know, that was sort of peak NJP. When you saw NJP's protests about, you know, the American government's support of Israel, that, again, was peak NJP. That was, you know, something to be looked at and said, whoa, that, you know, now we're getting somewhere. And that got the party noticed, that got, or the organization noticed, you know, whatever you want to call it. And it got them publicity, it got them headlines, but it actually forced the government to actually make changes. It actually forced the government to sit up and take notice, because what any government fears fundamentally is the fact that they're not doing anything for the people being pointed out. A great example of this at the moment is Patriot Front. So Patriot Front in America have been doing this incredible work for hurricane victims and the families of these hurricane victims. You know, the American government doesn't have any money for hurricane victims. Why doesn't it have any money for hurricane victims? Because it's spending all the money on Ukraine. It's spending all the money on Israel. But Patriot Front turns up, starts cleaning people's yards, you know, chopping down trees, chopping up trees that have fallen down, doing things for people that actually matters. And when I see things like that, I think that is the kind of pro-white advocacy that makes a difference. You see, pro-white advocacy has always been focused on the macro level. People who are pro-white advocates have spent so much time thinking about, we need to get to power, and when we're in power, this is our grand scheme. So all these pro-white advocates have spent decades writing grand scheme after grand scheme of what's going to change when their particular brand of pro-white advocacy reaches power. You know, you've had these amazing manifestos, you've had these papers on how the country could be run, you've had discussions on how, you know, we'd overhaul healthcare, migration, the benefits system. And you look at all that and you think, oh, you know, a lot of effort has been put in to all of that. But fundamentally, it's all been a complete flop. Because for all the big plans in the world, for all these grand manifestos, for all these amazing systems of repatriation and healthcare and policing and, you know, taxation, it's all just a pipe dream. None of these things have ever, ever been put into action by any party. So for all our great sort of macro level plans, we've never made a single change, let alone the positive changes our people need. And that might sound pretty harsh, what I'm saying, but it's absolutely true. However, what I believe is a much more positive route forward is talking about micro changes. Now, if you look at things on a micro level, okay, it's not as exciting as the idea of changing things on the macro level. So changing things on the macro level is very, very exciting. Like, oh, you know, when we take power, when we run the Home Office, when we control the borders, when we build the wall, when we put in a healthcare system where all the red tape's cut and foreigners are turned away and white pensioners are put first, it's going to be fantastic. You know, that is obviously an interesting way of talking, and it's also an exciting way of talking, but it never comes to fruition. However, on the micro level, we can actually make real changes in people's lives. So on a micro level, we can clear people's yards after a hurricane. We can raise money for political prisoners. We can go and protest against out-of-touch politicians who don't want to help after a chemical cleanup. We can protest outside prisons. We can provide legal advocacy for employers who are, for employees who are being abused in the workplace.
People often write to tell us what has happened for them since starting Extendivite. Allow me to read a few. After taking Extendivite for about 6 months, I've noticed improvement on the numbness of my hands and wrists from the carpal tunnel syndrome. I will continue to buy product. This formula is very powerful. I am feeling much better. My heart rate and blood pressure is stabilized, my lower edema has reduced, and lower leg pain due to blood clots has disappeared. This product has relieved what appears to be an angina problem, pain in the chest after climbing stairs and short on breath. I'm quite happy about it. To order, call 1-877-928-8822 or visit extendivite.com. That's extendivite.com.
Extend your life with Extendivite.
Are you sick of censorship? TLB Talk is the cure. TLB stands for Truth, Liberty, and Balance. We are the newest and most unique social media platform to hit the internet. We were built out of necessity because Big Tech, Big Pharma, and Big Brother are out of control. The only thing bigger than them is when we, the people, are united. With that vision, TLB Talk was born. Our battlefield is in cyberspace. The battle we're in can be won by clicks of buttons and voting with your wallet. TLB Talk has no hidden agendas, no corporate funding, and we do not sell, trade, or give away any of your information. Our platform runs off of generous donations of members and merchandise profits. So please, check out our site. It's the best around. And be sure to stop by our store. It's loaded with items that'll have you feeling a sense of member pride and victory. Come unite with us today at tlbtalk.com and join the social media revolution.
Hey there, are you going to wait till the cows come home to get your new ease-off drop-in lift?
What in the world is an ease-off drop-in lift?
Our EaseOff is a new tool to increase production for your meat processing company that will get that whole hog or half a beef on or off your rail with our remote control.
That sounds great, but can I afford it?
Sure, and the EaseOff installs fast. The effortless operation will reduce fatigue, speed up your line, and increase profits.
Okay, I'm convinced. Where can I get my EaseOff?
Go to EaseOff.com. That's EaseOff.com. And hurry, because we're offering free shipping for a limited time. EaseOff.com. We make pigs fly. Cows, too.
EaseOff, LLC, 417-932-6419.
Can protest outside prisons. We can provide legal advocacy for employers who are, for employees who are being abused in the workplace for their beliefs or the fact that they're white. All of these things can actually be affected if, it's a big if, we as a nationalist group think a little bit more outside the box. Now, the problem is nationalists don't. Nationalists are so focused on these big macro changes that they rarely ever think about the micro level. But here's the rub. If you make enough changes at a micro level, what do you end up with? Well, you end up fundamentally with the macro changes. Because if you make all these changes at a local level, eventually, as you make those changes, normal people will see that and it will attract more people to our cause. Now, here's the interesting thing. I've been talking about micro and macro, but a picture is, look, when you step back from a picture and you look at a picture from a distance, you see it on the macro level and you want to make those big changes to the picture. But every picture is made up of millions and millions of tiny brush strokes. They're the micro changes that I'm talking about. And if you make enough of those small changes, the big changes will start to take shape. So I do believe there's a lot of positives that white advocates can be involved in. I believe there's a lot of positives and a lot of things that we can do as pro-white advocates. But to achieve those things, we need to start focusing on realistic achievements and realistic goals. We have to stop, you know, sort of shooting for the moon, so to speak. We have to start thinking of, well, okay, we might not be able to take control of United States Congress. We're not going to get a presidential candidate running for a third party who's going to win. It's just never going to happen. But what if we went and helped these hurricane victims and were embedded in their community? What if we had every other white American in East Palestine saying, well, this is a great group, we're going to, you know, support them with regular donations? What if you went to somewhere like Springfield, Ohio, and explained to the people of Springfield, Ohio, that actually Haitian migration is completely unnecessary, and there are people, you know, in the Ozarks creating a pro-white town where you can move to and live amongst people who look like you and think like you and want a traditional American community? You know, there's so many things out there that we can do that don't involve pouring, you know, millions and millions of pounds into what is essentially, for a small group, a rigged game.
Yep. Well, okay. All sounds very interesting, but we're out of time. So I'd like to thank you for joining me, Mark.
Well, thank you for having me, Patrick. It's been a very interesting discussion. We've talked about something I don't think we've ever spoken about before. So hopefully that's food for thought for some of the people who listen to your excellent shows.
I'm sure it is. And I'll be back again tomorrow with another exciting episode of National Bugle Radio.
Folks, this is Mike Gatti, the Rebel Madman at Republic Broadcasting Network. If you are searching for your inner rebel, it can be found at the Dixie Republic. It's the world's largest Confederate store, located in Travelers Rest, South Carolina. The anti-white, anti-Christ, anti-Southern world ends at the asphalt. Welcome to God's country. Log on to thedixierepublic.com to view all of their Southern merchandise, from flags to t-shirts to artwork. At the store, browse through their extensive collection of belt buckles and have a custom-made leather belt handcrafted in their Johnny Reb gun and leather shop. Now remember, dixierepublic.com. where you can meet all of your Southern needs. You can't handle the truth.
You're listening to Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit republicbroadcasting.org today, because you